This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hey everybody, it's the Hockey News Podcast. Matt Larkin here with Ryan Kennedy, and back from his self-imposed exile is Ken the Boycotter Campbell.
The people spoke, Matt.
Yeah.
The people spoke. It wasn't self-imposed.
I guess that's true, yeah.
They didn't want me. They didn't want Ken Campbell to kick around.
And technically, he was the podcast athlete from Ken Campbell.
Olympic podcaster from Canada. Ken is kind of like Eric Carlson or Mike Green today, which is trade deadline day, in that, you know, you might have wanted him gone, but you're still stuck with him. Sorry, everybody.
And all the cap implications that it comes with.
That's right. The trade deadline has officially passed as of this time. A lot of deals to talk about. Not as many in terms of volume, but most of the big names did move, other than, of course, Mike Green. I guess we have to start by talking about the doozy, the Ryan McDonagh trade. The doozy. Mm. The Lightning got Ryan McDonagh and JT Miller for Vladimir Mesnikov, Brett Howden, Libor Hayek, a 2018 first-round pick, and a conditional second-round pick. Man, oh, man. I mean, that's a true blockbuster. And personally, when I saw the list of what the Rangers were getting, I thought, oh, that's for McDonagh, right? And I was stunned that JT Miller was also included. So for that reason, I think this is an absolute coup for the Lightning. I think Steve Yzerman took Jeff Gorton to the cleaners. Really? So what do you guys think?
I disagree. I think it's a really good trade for the Rangers. In fact, well, we'll get to that later. But I think this is one of those trades where you can say both teams got exactly what they needed here.
Yeah.
You could even put both of these teams at the top of your trade deadline winners list, in my opinion, because, you know, I mean, the Rangers have recognized that it's over. It's over, and you've got to move on. And I think Jeff Gorton did, between the Rick Nash trade and this trade, I think Jeff Gorton did a masterful job of putting the rebuild into place and, you know, I mean, starting to, you know, really put some pieces into place that can make this team a contender a few years down the road. I think he did very, very well.
Yeah, and I mean, you toss in the Michael Grabner trade too. Like, Igor Rykov has some pretty decent potential. Yep. As a young defenseman. You won't see him for, you know, another year or two, but once he comes over, he could be the kind of guy that, mm-hmm, after maybe a short stint in Hartford, you give him a whirl. I agree. I think, even though, like, Tampa won the deal in the sense that they are best poised to win the Stanley Cup now, they, you know, Steve Yzerman achieved what was necessary. He got a top end defenseman, and he got a very good forward to replace the one in Mesnikov that he traded. But I agree, for Jeff Gorton, he did exactly what New York needs over the past couple of days, which is get a bunch of picks, get high end picks, and get some prospects that are well on their way as well. I mean, when we talk about Libor Hayek, I would think that, you know, you're not going to see him with New York next season, but the season after that, I could certainly see him, you know, competing for a job then. And I think you could probably say the same thing for Brett Howden, where, you know, maybe, yeah, he needs a couple more years. But, you know, both players are all-around guys. You know, Hayek, he's a minute-munching defenseman. You know, he's got some offense, but that's not really his thing. I mean, he's a good skater. He's a defensive guy. In Howden, you get a 200-foot guy. I mean, maybe he's kind of a future JT Miller in a way. So you get those guys, and like I said, you got Rykov in the Devils deal. You got a host of picks. New York now has 3 first round picks in 2018.
Yeah, they've got that's seven. Big. They've got 7 picks in the top 93.
Right. Yeah, so you
got
add
2 second rounders, 2 third rounders, and 3 first rounders.
So you get 3 first rounders this year. You had 2 first rounders last year in Elias Andersson and Philip Hedel.
Right.
Both of whom look really good already.
Good, yeah.
You might see them full time in a Rangers uniform as soon, mm-hmm, as next year. So I think it's almost like, you know, Jeff Gorton is looking at this realistically and saying next year's probably a washout, but that's okay.
See, I don't deny anything either of you has just said. I think the Rangers have the right approach. They sent the letter to the fans. They've added a whole bunch of picks. It's the Twilight Zone. The Rangers are getting multiple picks, yeah, in the first round. All that is absolutely true, but I don't think it means they got enough. JT Miller is in his mid-20s. He's a proven 20-goal, 50-point floor guy. He's not an expiring asset. He's an RFA, still under team control. So to me, the problem is, yes, I like everything that the Rangers got, but they didn't get enough.
I got a couple of things to say. First thing is this. Second thing is, You didn't see. You weren't at the World Juniors, bud.
Neither were you. I was thinking of the Olympics that you weren't at.
Yeah. Libor Hájek, in my opinion, and Ryan might disagree with me with this, a little on this. I think other than Rasmus Dahlin, Libor Hájek was the best defenseman in the, at the World Juniors this year.
Dylan Strome's had a lot of good World Juniors, too.
He didn't dominate. What I'm saying is,
theoretical production does not equal actual production.
Okay, so then nobody should ever trade prospects for anybody.
That's obviously not what I'm saying.
Well, okay, but
what I'm saying is, like, it's not like Libor Hájek is Miro Heiskanen, and he's not an elite prospect. He's a second-tier prospect. He's not a proven guy. We think we know what he's going to be at the NHL level. We don't know it. And the Rangers got only one guaranteed proven asset in that trade, Namestnikov. They gave up their captain, who's also has a year left on his deal, so massively valuable guy. And they give up JT Miller, who's, again, a proven top six forward, 20-goal, 50-goal floor, or 50-point floor. Right. So I just don't think they got enough, considering that most of what they received in the deal was theoretical assets.
Now, let me pose this to you, Matt. I agree, JT Miller, very good player, but he never seemed to fit in under Alain Vigneault. So is that kind of a mitigating factor here where, like, on the Rangers, he was never a top six guy? They always had him as a top nine guy.
Right, yeah.
So even though his sort of objective worth might have been better than his subjective worth in New York, I think that, I'm not sure, like, do you have to take that into consideration that he was kind of misused in New York?
It's fair. I mean, it's just interesting to me.
Well, if he couldn't be a top six forward on the Rangers, how the hell is he going to be a top six forward in Tampa?
But I mean, he got power play. I mean, it's the modern definition. Like, he was quote unquote top nine, but I mean, his ice time, he still got power play. Like, he was essentially a top six guy. You know what I mean? I just find it interesting because if you look at Jess Rick Nash, and he's an expiring asset, and he netted a first rounder, a prospect. Was it a pick as well? Right? For Nash?
Yeah.
Right. So if you look at that's just what a UFA got. But I mean, Miller and
McDonough
net a first rounder, a prospect, one roster player, another pick. It just doesn't seem, compared to what you got for Nash. I mean, I think Gorton's first two trades, the Grabner deal and the Nash deal, were fantastic. Uh-huh. I just feel like he gave up a lot and didn't get full value personally. Do you guys think now that the Lightning are the front runner for the Stanley Cup after making this trade, if they weren't already?
Yeah, they already were. They already were, and now you'd have to say, I mean, they're certainly the favorite to come out of the East. I would say.
Yeah, that Tampa, and I mean, you look at Pittsburgh, and you look at them getting Derek Brassard, and so you go Crosby, Malkin, Brassard down the middle.
Yeah, that's not
that's
bad.
Pretty hot. But I think Tampa, I would still give them an edge in that series, even though that would be a hell of a series. Mm-hmm. And if Pittsburgh won, I wouldn't be shocked. But I think you have to look at those two teams. I almost feel like Boston took a step back.
Mm-hmm. I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah.
I don't think,
because Spooner was included.
You don't win with this guy. I mean, okay, you win world championships, but...
Right, and I forgot, Spooner also went to the Rangers in the deal too, right?
So I mean, Spooner for Nash, one for one, might have been, you know, forget about Lindgren and the pick and everything. I mean, they took on Bolesky's contract, but they were able to do that, and it's not a big deal for them, right? I feel like the Bruins are on the loser side of the ledger for sure.
And the other interesting element to the McDonough acquisition is that it may or may not have blocked the Leafs, who it was reported the Leafs were in on McDonough, and the Leafs 13-2 in their last 15 games. They've beaten Tampa over that stretch. They've only lost to Pittsburgh and Boston over that stretch. Yeah. They did add Plekanec, so they're extremely deep down the middle. They look pretty stacked. And I thought that that was a precursor to another deal that the Leafs were going to really go all in, but maybe they just decided. I wonder if they decided, A, that the price was too high, but also, B, maybe they're going to see how they do this spring, and then next year is going to be their crazy year. Like, maybe, you know, let's say the Leafs win a round. Maybe they beat Boston, lose to Tampa Bay or something. And maybe at the draft is when they make their big move for next year. I'm not sure. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I mean, they also had to think about keeping their own guys, right? Keeping their own rentals, right? And JVR, Komarov, and Bozak. So, you know, I mean, they could have gone one way or the other with this. I wouldn't have been surprised if, you know, if they looked at what the Rangers got for Rick Nash, and, you know, might have done a double take on, do we trade James Van Riemsdyk?
Do we
think about that? Because if Rick Nash is getting that kind of haul, boy, Van Riemsdyk's a 30-goal scorer.
Yeah, fair.
You know?
Another left winger dealt today that got a crazy return was Thomas Tatar. going to the Vegas Golden Knights for a first-round pick in 2018, a second-rounder in 2019, a third-rounder in 2021. Interesting one because, A, no salary was retained by the Red Wings, and B, Tatar also under contract for three more seasons after this one. So, I just finished writing about this one for the website, and I think it's an interesting trade because, I mean, it's a coup for Ken Holland. It sucks that he struck out on Mike Green. I really think that it seems like Green's neck injury maybe scared teams off.
It really did.
Yeah, it really was a problem. Yeah. But, so I said in the blog, he batted .500 today, but the one hit he did get was a home run. I think it's great, and the Red Wings, they have two picks in the first round, two in the second, two in the third, two in the fourth this spring, which is amazing. And from Vegas's perspective, it's kind of interesting. Like, I think they really did overpay, but it's a sneaky move because Tatar is under contract three more years.
Yeah.
So basically, it turns James Neal or David Perron into the rental, and Tatar, who's younger than them, can stay for several seasons. So it's kind of,
maybe you swap one in, swap one out. Yeah. They did build up a ton of assets, too. So it wasn't like they were giving away stuff that they couldn't, you know, that they couldn't afford or that they didn't have or that was going to really put them in a bad position in a couple of years. And to me, Thomas Tatar, like, doesn't he seem like the kind of guy who would score the overtime winner in game 7 of the second round?
Yeah, he might.
Or, you know, like he might not ever be the guy that you think he's going to be or you want him to be, but he just seems like that kind of guy that would score that big goal that would put you into the next round.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, I will note that, you know, these three picks are all in different years. And in particular, I look at the second rounder, it's 2019. Vegas had three second rounders in 2019.
Yeah.
So in losing that, they still have two. It sounds like a lot of picks, but from Vegas's perspective, you know, like they can afford it. Like they have those picks. They're still building up a pipeline. I thought they had a dynamite 2017 draft where they made, you know, more picks than there were rounds. I thought they got value all throughout. Like Jack Dugan, one of their later round picks, is one of the highest scorers in the USHL this year.
Right.
So they made some good picks. They got different positions in those picks. I thought they did very well there. So for them to lose that second rounder and even like a third rounder in 2021, like who the hell knows what that's going to be worth when we get that far? You know, will we even make it to 2021? Who even knows?
And will Nikita Gusev come over?
That's a good question, too.
Interesting. And Vegas, to me, also, I mean, they're in an absolutely unprecedented position. They lead the NHL in points percentage, which means, and they're the most deadly home team in the NHL. They're slated to have home ice through to the Stanley Cup final right now. So I think for that reason alone, they're Stanley Cup contenders. And it was reported by Bob McKenzie that they were in it till the end on Erik Karlsson. And I kind of get it. Even if it means they would have had to sell a bit of the farm, it's kind of, guys, what do we do here? This was, who knew this was going to happen? We have to take our shot. So by that logic alone, I kind of get it, the Tatar move. And hey, he's under contract for three more seasons after this one. He's 27. He probably still has good years left in him. And if they can turn supposed checker William Karlsson into Mr. on pace for 40-plus goals, what's Thomas Tatar going to do in Gerard Gallant's system? Tatar's fast, and they play that crazy up-tempo game.
Yeah.
Maybe he's an amazing fit. Who knows?
Yeah.
So it's a sneaky good trade. I mean, I think Detroit wins it because of what the haul was, but I understand why Vegas did it as well. We also have Patrick Maroon going to the New Jersey Devils for, I think, a pretty modest return of J.D. Dudek and third-round draft pick. What do you guys think of that
one?
He's
a pretty modest player.
Yeah.
A pretty what?
He's a pretty modest player.
Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah. Well, I don't think he's worth that much more than that. Do you guys?
It's more based on what Rick Nash got. I mean, is Maroon, if you look in the last three seasons, I mean, I feel like their goal totals are probably almost the same.
Maroon doesn't skate near as well as Rick Nash does.
Yes,
fair. And Nash can kill penalties.
Yeah, Nash can do some things.
He can do other
things. Other than, you know, put his stick down and go to the net.
So you think Maroon's going to be exposed now that he's not playing with, I mean, I know he wasn't always playing with McDavid this year, but just,
that was a big driver for it. I think the expectations will be a bit different because he's coming to a Devils collective where they already had offense and they had speed. So, you know, getting a big net front presence is a nice, you know, it gives them a little more variety up front. And then, of course, they got Michael Grabner already. You know, you get that fast veteran player who can kill penalties, can score 5-on-5. So with Maroon, you're getting a different look. And like J.D. Dudek, he's at Boston College right now. you know, he's kind of like he's a decent prospect, but I mean, he's not like guaranteed to be an NHLer. Third round pick, you know, I mean, you can get value out of that, but I think that, you know, for a player that was pretty coveted that we talked a lot about coming into the deadline, I thought he would go for a bit more. Maybe it was how long it took for the deal to actually go down. Maybe there was a little bit of a, we got to wrap this up.
Yeah.
Hit the fax machine.
Right? That's right. That's
the
right.
Fax machine. The fax machine.
I liked it. I mean,
get the devil machine.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I really like what Rashiro has done. I mean,
yeah.
He didn't dip deep or he didn't go high on the team's prospect ladder. Like if he traded Rika, but I think Future Watch comes out soon and he was near the bottom of the team's prospect list. And the team's undoubtedly better, and they've got all these rookies. They have more guys on the way, guys like Mikey McLeod, and they didn't damage that group. I mean, I feel like it's just, I don't know. I really like what the Devils have done, and didn't cost them much.
Yeah, and I think there's a really good psychological element to what Shiro did, where, you know, this is a Devils squad that, in particular, I feel for Taylor Hall, it's like we want to make the playoffs. And even for the young guys, it's great for players like Nico Hischier and Jesper Bratt to get that experience right off the hop. And so for Shiro, it's him saying to that core group, like, you guys earned this. I'm gonna get Grabner. I'm going to get Maroon. We're really going to bolster our forward core. You know, Corey Schneider's going to be back soon. That's our starter. We're surviving right now. We want some home playoff games. Even if it's just one round, let's get that early experience. Let's get Hall off the schneid. And it just feels like he didn't have to give up that much. And it's just like a good vibe thing.
Yeah, and I mean now you have a duo of Taylor Hall and Nico Hischier. And now you've got a backup duo of, you know, Grabner, Maroon. Paul Mary's been playing very, very well lately. So they're all of a sudden they're a lot more dangerous and a lot more difficult to shut down. I think that's what makes it more intriguing from a Devils prospect is that, you know, I mean, the Devils, your father's Devils have always been pretty easy to shut down. This team won't be as easy to shut down, even if you put the clamps on some of their better players.
It's true. The Devils, they've reminded me so much this year of the Leafs last year. Like, team that was rebuilding, got the first overall pick, was just better way sooner than people expected, and made that little, you know, little moves at the trade deadline to get better, give the kids a vote of confidence.
Got Brian Boyle.
Yeah, got Brian Boyle. And I think they're going to scare. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And I think they're going to, I think the Devils, I see them as a team that they might not go far this year, but they might put a scare in a higher seed. You know, maybe they play
Washington.
Yeah, that's right. Of course.
Everybody puts a scare in Washington.
That's right. We would put a scare in Washington somehow. Yeah. One of the weirder trades of the day, Evander Kane goes to the San Jose Sharks and Buffalo Sabres get Danny O'Regan, who's one of the Sharks' higher end prospects. Middling. Reunites the Boston University line of Jack Eichel and Evan Rodriguez and Danny O'Regan. They get a conditional first-round pick in 2019, but not only is it 2019, it also becomes a second-round pick if Evander Kane doesn't resign in San Jose. So I don't know what to think about this one. You guys go first.
Well, to me, Doug Wilson got all the benefit without any risk.
Yeah.
You know? And Jason Botterill, quite frankly, in my opinion, is a rookie GM who got taken to school by a veteran who... you know, who's been through these trades a lot. And I think Jason Botterill has proved today that he has a ways to go before he becomes a really good general manager in the NHL. It's either that or, you know, Evander Kane is such poison that people don't want anything to do with him. And I mean, he's been on his best behavior for the better part of a year now, and you know, both on and off the ice, and he's been pretty good, and he's been a good citizen and all those other things. And you know, you look at him, he goes into a place in Tampa where
San Jose
where you know, the roles are very clearly defined. They have one of the best veteran leadership groups probably in the NHL.
Right.
You know, when you take Joe Thornton, Joe Pavelski, and Brent Burns, I don't think Evander Kane's going to be stepping outside.
Couture, Joe Ward.
I mean, they've got an incredible, you know, leadership, veteran leadership group that will be able to say to Evander, okay, Evander, we really like you. You're a good player. You've got 20 goals. You're fast. You're big. You can play physical. You can do all these things that can help us in the playoffs. But this is how we do things around here. And this is how you're going to make, you know, you're trying to play for a contract next year. So this is how you're best going to be able to do that and fit into our structure. This is how we do things. If you follow the way we do things, it's going to be good for you and it's going to be good for us.
Yeah. And I do like him on the Sharks. Like, you think about them and they're already a pretty heavy skilled team up front. You add him, it's like, man, this, again, we talk about matchup problems, and you look at the Sharks and maybe they're not like the most complete team out west right now, but I mean, they're looking pretty good when you add Kane to that roster and you subtract nothing. Like, Danny O'Regan, you know, he played some games with the Sharks, also played for the Barracuda in the AHL. So, I mean, they have guys like him that can come up when necessary. I think, you know, in a Western Conference that seems pretty wide open right now, you know, you look at Winnipeg, you look at Nashville. But if I'm San Jose and, you know, if Martin Jones is cooking, and it's like, they got some good things going on
here. They could
here.
Be a surprise. They could be a real surprise. Yeah. How would you like to be a fan of the Buffalo Sabres, though, right now? Like, you've been putting up with this crap for the better part of 3 or 4 years now.
Yeah.
You're still going to the games because I see their attendance figures. They're still getting 16,000 to 18,000 people at every game. You're still going to the games. You still believe in all of this. And you're watching this team and you're going, well, you know, everybody's telling us that we suck, but at least we're going to get a crap load of stuff for this Evander Kane and this Evander Kane trade. And then you look and you go, are you shitting me?
Yeah.
Like, are you serious?
And especially, like, I feel like Doug Wilson has Jason Botterill by the cojones right now. Just, he's like, okay, let's see. Pavelski's in his 30s, Burns is in his 30s, Thornton's on the last year of his deal, hopefully back for the playoffs. I know our window's probably close to closing, so O'Regan is not going to be part of our long-term plans. He's not like this elite prospect. We can afford to lose him. We have Kane for a rental, maybe a cup run. If we lose, we let Kane walk because we don't want to give up a first-round pick, and maybe Thornton retires, or maybe he goes somewhere else.
Yeah.
The run's over.
That's what makes it almost unfathomable from my perspective, is that you know, Doug Wilson, he's holding the cards here.
Yeah.
So if Evander Kane plays really well, they go on a long playoff run and he figures he wants to re-sign him, he re-signs him. If the San Jose Sharks go on a really long playoff run and Evander Kane plays really well and they don't want to re-sign him, they don't re-sign him.
Yeah.
You know?
Like, we'll take the first round.
And
pick.
Then
thanks,
if it all goes south, he just says, see you later. You know?
Yeah. R.I.P. Sabres Twitter.
Yeah. Oh, man. Oh, man. Big time.
I can only imagine.
Another team that upgraded in the West is, they already were looking like one of the more stacked squads. But now the Winnipeg Jets have the luxury of Paul Stastny as their third line center.
Yeah.
And they surrendered Eric Foley, 2018 first round pick, a conditional 2020 fourth round pick. I mean, to me, we've talked for years about the Jets having such a deep stacked farm system. And I mean, Foley, a decent prospect, as you can probably explain further, Ryan.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like he was Jack Roslovic, not one of their elite prospects.
Yeah.
To me, I feel like the upside, and they also, the Blues retain half that salary, $3.5 million. I don't know. I see very little downside to this for the Jets. What do you guys think?
Well, to me, I think the biggest statement that was made in all of this was, and I realize that, you know, it could end up being a 2-month thing, but that Paul Stastny had a no trade clause, and he is he the first player in NHL history to have a no trade clause and go to Winnipeg?
He may very well
be the first player in NHL history to pull off that feat. And I think that speaks volumes more than anything. The thing with Winnipeg is, and you know, we all know, it's cold there. Okay, big deal. It's cold there, and it's a little out of the way, and travel's difficult and all that. So they've always got to have a good team if they want to attract players like Paul Stastny at the deadline or free agents. And to me, this tells the league, this is a good team. This is a really good team. You know, I mean, this team could, you know, I mean, they're not going to win the Stanley Cup this year, because we said they're going to win it next year.
Right.
Okay?
Yeah.
They're
Houston Astros.
They have to win it next year.
So maybe they'll win it this year, but they're going to win it next year too.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, I think that is the biggest takeaway for me from this, is that the players on the Jets can now sit there and go, we can hang with the big boys now.
Mm.
We are a legitimate team that people want to come to. And I think that just gives them a jolt like nobody's business.
Yeah, and you know, as you said, Eric Foley, he's a pretty decent prospect. I've always been a fan. He's fast, he's strong, he's athletic, he's got some nice offense to his game. Right now he's at Providence College, but he's probably not going to be there much longer. You know, he could return for a senior year. From what I'm hearing, you know, he could probably come out and turn pro, and it wouldn't shock anybody. So, you know, St. Louis, this adds to an already impressive pipeline. I get the feeling that the Blues, it's kind of like last year where GM Doug Armstrong traded Kevin Shattenkirk, even though they were still a playoff team, right, where it's right. Like, if we make it, we make it, but we're probably not the faves, so let's do what's prudent. I'll say this about Paul Stastny. You know, I mean, he was always seen as, like, a pretty good center, but when I watched him in the playoffs last year, he just had this like feistiness that I wasn't used to, where it's like, man, Paul Stastny,
he was a beast.
He came to play.
Yeah, yeah, he was so, a beast in
like,
the playoffs.
If you're getting that Paul Stastny, I mean, that's pretty hot, because as we already know, I mean, Winnipeg's got some of the finest forwards in the league right now. When you talk Scheifele, Wheeler, Laine, like, they've got great depth. You toss Paul Stastny in there, and again, like, matchup problems in the West, like, who wants to tangle with those centers in Winnipeg? Yeah.
And you need that in the West. You have to have that in the West. And the Winnipeg Jets are getting a $2 million Paul Stastny. They're not getting the $7 million Paul Stastny, right? Like, the $7 million Paul Stastny you watch and you go, sometimes it's like, wow, that's a lot of money for him.
But it's only
$2 million Paul Stastny.
$3.5 million prorated.
Yeah, so.
And it's interesting, too, because the Jets, one of the only areas they've struggled in this year, I mean, they haven't been bad at much, but their penalty killing was mediocre. But from what I understand, Stastny's going to kill penalties as well, get some power play time kill penalties, so he's going to help fill that void. And to me, it really sets up the Jets for what I think is going to be a winner goes to the Stanley Cup final matchup with Nashville in round two. Mm. That's what I see happening. Yep. Yep. And no disrespect to Vegas, but I see the.
Yeah, nobody
the
really believes.
I know, isn't it funny?
It's like hard,
Vegas, come on, we're first overall.
Yeah. But, well, since you said they weren't going to have 10 wins at Christmas, maybe I'll pick Vegas.
Yeah, let's just reiterate that. I said that Vegas would have their 10th win on January 1st. How many? I think Vegas has like 83 wins. Yeah. Even though it's an 82-game schedule.
Pretty amazing.
The thing, though, with Winnipeg, getting back to Winnipeg, is this is what you do when you're the Winnipeg Jets. This is what you have to do. Mm. Okay, so you build up, you know, through trades, through drafts and developing and being smart, you build up a really good stable of young players so that when you are in a position to contend, a Paul Stastny comes along and you can give up a really good prospect. Mm-hmm. And really, you're not going to miss too much.
Yeah, fair. Because you have Jack Roslovic, you have a couple of guys in Manitoba having surprising years.
Roslovic, who they got in the Evander Kane trade as the pick.
Oh, as the pick. Yeah, oh, my goodness. Wow.
Which makes it even worse for Buffalo.
Oh, poor Buffalo. I think we should pour one out for the non-rental guys who were talked up but didn't get moved today. Mm. So Eric Karlsson, Mike Hoffman, Max Pacioretty. I guess let's talk a bit about the Senators. Do you consider this day a failure for Pierre Dorion because he couldn't move those major assets? Or do you think he was smart because he maybe just didn't get the offer that he needed?
Well, I think it's hard to say because we don't know what the offers were for Eric Karlsson. Mm. But it's not a good day in the nation's capital. It's not a good day. This is going to get worse. This is going to get worse. They're going to get more estranged, I think. Yeah. Like, I don't think, like, nobody in the hockey world is talking about, well, maybe they can, you know, maybe they can mend fences with Eric Karlsson and, you know, he'll come back, his wife's from there and blah, 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 you know, and he'll stay. No, like, everybody knows that he's going. And see, the thing to me is that if you traded for Eric Karlsson today, you're getting two playoff rounds out of him. Two playoff years out of him, rather than just one if you trade him at the draft.
Yeah.
But I mean, you can't let that make, you know, I mean, this guy is your franchise player. He's the face of the franchise. Might be, you know, I guess Alfie's still the greatest player they've ever had, but he's in the top couple of players in franchise history.
I think he's number one person.
Yeah. So you can't. You know, you can't get fleeced on this one. You just can't. Yeah. And obviously the offers weren't good enough. It's not like they didn't want to or they wouldn't. I'm sure they tried. and they couldn't get what they wanted. But this is, it doesn't make it any better. It doesn't make it any easier to me. It's depressing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Two thoughts on it. First, in terms of actual trade value, you know, one thing I was hearing, it was kind of interesting, was when we started talking about Erik Karlsson being dealt, the idea was, oh man, like, how much are you going to have to give up to get Erik Karlsson? But the mitigating factor is, you know, once you trade for him, you're right, you would get two playoffs if you did it, you know, at the deadline. You get one if you do it at the draft. But then he becomes a UFA, and if you re-sign him, how much is Erik Karlsson going to cost you?
Yeah.
$10 million?
Mm-hmm.
11?
Yeah.
Who knows? So then you have to, when you're making that initial trade, you have to say, okay, well, if we want to re-sign him, that takes up a big chunk of our salary cap, and we could only have, you know, so many other big ticket players on our roster at the time. So when we're making that offer to Ottawa, it can't be that steep. So I'm wondering if part of the problem for Pierre Dorion was he needed to get a King's ransom, but other teams are looking at the big picture and saying, well, if you know, cap space is also an asset, and if we get Erik Karlsson, we lose that asset, even though Erik Karlsson is one of the best defensemen of his generation.
Yeah, particularly if you have to take on Bobby Ryan's contract too.
And, yeah, exactly, which is a long-term deal. And that, so it wasn't, I don't think it was a matter of Pierre Dorion just saying to the NHL, give me your best offer and I will select
the most. He was not sitting there as the, you know, as the, you know, the mafia don here.
Exactly.
Saying, give me all your best offers.
There's extraneous factors.
I don't know that it's definitely the case, but I think we can muse over the fact that Erik Karlsson may very well be a declining asset.
He did lose half his ankle. Even half his ankle.
Like that was ridiculously serious surgery he had over the summer. And so what if he's, I mean, he went into this year as, in my opinion, one of the top three players in the world.
Yeah, for sure.
He's not that now.
Mm-hmm.
Will he ever be that? Will he ever even be, like, really, really good? Because who knows?
He's lost a step, at least for this year.
Yeah.
Mm.
And the next Karlsson deal, if it happens, is going to be way more complicated, because to me it has to play out one of two ways. You can't just trade for 1 year of Erik Karlsson now. Either you have to wait till next year when he's a rental, the true rental, because the price will come down.
Mm.
Or if you do want to trade for him at the draft, you need to negotiate. You need to know that you're going to sign him to that extension. And in which case, then you cannot take Bobby Ryan, because then you're taking like $17 million in cap space in one trade, right? So I think it's going to make it, it's going to change the list of suitors, which could help Dorion, but it's going to make it, I think, even more complicated to execute.
But can you do that at the draft even?
Well, sorry,
can you even do that at the draft?
Not officially.
You have to wait till July 1st.
Not officially. But you get the negotiation window, and then he's eligible for an extension July 1st.
I mean, you could talk about it, but you can't sign him till July 1st. Yeah. So you could
you might have
a handshake
agreement. Carson's interested in re-signing.
Yeah.
You can't obviously disclose that to the public.
And the last thing I would say on the whole issue, you talked about this being, you know, only getting worse. The only way it doesn't get worse is Eugene Melnyk sells the team.
Yeah.
Then you get a do-over.
Yeah.
Then Erik Karlsson can stay in Ottawa.
Hmm. Interesting. Lastly, I want to hear your picks for your biggest winner and biggest loser of the 2018 deadline.
Mm-hmm. You go first.
Okay.
Let me think about it.
For a winner, I'm going to go with Tampa Bay. It's the easy answer, but they got exactly what they needed. I mean, they already had Victor Hedman and Anton Strahlman headlining that decor. You add Ryan McDonagh, a guy who can still give you 24 minutes a night. He can play on the power play. He can play on the penalty kill if you need him to. And that's the amazing thing is Tampa Bay, they have that luxury where it's like, well, maybe you're on our power play. Maybe not. We've got some pretty good weapons already. We might not need you. But penalty kill, sure, we can use you there. We can use you, you know, munching minutes, taking some pressure off Victor Hedman. They now have like 8 NHL defensemen at their disposal, and that's a tremendous advantage going into the playoffs. Because even if you get hit by injuries, you're still kind of okay. And then, of course, you know, adding JT Miller, he essentially replaces Vlad Namestnikov in the short term, and that's great. As for my loser, I'm going to go with Vancouver. And the big reason, the Thomas Vanek deal, I just felt like that was a big swing and a miss, where if you're the Canucks, you know, Jim Benning is a GM from a scouting background. He takes pride in his drafting. They have a great scouting staff right now. You got zero picks today.
Woof.
You got zero picks. You added nothing to your draft day war chest. You get Tyler Mott, who's all right.
Tyler Mott.
Yeah. He's a human being who plays hockey.
Yeah. He certainly exists.
poor Tyler Mott. I'm sorry if you're listening, Tyler Mott.
Sorry, Tyler Mott.
We're just kidding.
I know.
Kind of.
And then Jussi Jokinen, who was waived in the season and has played for basically an entire division of teams in the past 2 years. Mm-hmm. For Thomas Vanek, a player who, flawed as he might be, was coveted. I mean, we talked about, oh, what can the Canucks get for Thomas Vanek? It's like, I would have preferred they just got like a second round pick.
Yeah,
like,
that stink from that playoff in Montreal is still on him, on that guy. That's the part of the problem for Vancouver, is that, you know, I mean.
But he played well this year.
Yeah.
You know, that's the thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay, winner. I'm gonna disagree with you, Matt. I'm gonna go with the Rangers. I think that they started a process with the deals that they made that really pushes them in a definite direction, and it makes a statement that they are now, you know, in a rebuild. And I really like the fact that they weren't wishy-washy about it, okay? Like, we're in a rebuild. We have to, you know, there's things we have to do around here to get our roster in shape for a couple of years from now, and we're going to do them. So I really like that. The biggest loser, I think, is the Ottawa Senators for not, you know, for maybe it's out of their control for not trading Erik Karlsson, for not trading Hoffman. Second and closely followed by the New York Islanders, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you why. Not because they didn't trade John Tavares today, but because they didn't even listen to offers for John Tavares today. They had absolutely zero intention of trading him today. And to not listen to offers for an unrestricted free agent that you have no idea whether he's coming back or not, I think is downright irresponsible. Mm-hmm. And to me, this is going to look really bad when John Tavares signs with the San Jose Sharks on July 1st.
Wow. Mm. Interesting, Kenny boy. Well, this is fun. We all have different picks for winners and losers. My winner and loser are tied to the same principle. So the Pittsburgh Penguins, they understand what they are now. They're going for 3 straight cups. They've completely gutted their prospect cupboard. They don't care. Jim Rutherford's like, woohoo!
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. They're in the final years of Crosby and Malkin's prime. They lose a goaltending prospect in Gustafson, but they've got Matt Murray, Tristan Jarry, who are young guys. It just makes a ton of sense to get Derek Brassard. He replaces the Nick Bonino role. I'd say he's probably a bit better than Nick Bonino.
Sure. Oh,
extremely experienced in the playoffs as well. It's funny. Now the Penguins have, I think, the top 4 most experienced players since 2014.
Because
Hagelin and Brassard are both part of the Rangers in 2014.
Yes.
So they're loaded with experience. I mean, they already were, but I think
Brassard had a long playoff run last year.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Against the Penguins.
They
look to me like the favorite to come out of the Metro. And we know they have the experience edge over pretty much everybody in the field. They're the hottest team in the league other than the Leafs. But they beat the Leafs recently. And on the other side, staying in the Metro Division, another team that has a superstar in his prime whose years you don't want to waste anymore, it's the Washington Capitals. And they're running out of amazing Alex Ovechkin seasons. They're going to lose possibly John Carlson as a UFA this summer. Braden Holtby's nearing the end of his prime years, or at least he's in the middle of his prime. I feel like you need to take your shot. And I like the fact that they are linked supposedly as another
Carlson.
I thought, you know what, why not? Because they're losing years, especially of Ovechkin, who's now into his early 30s, and to come up with nothing, I don't think anyone is going to pick Washington to be even in the top 5 contenders for the Stanley Cup, which of course means they're going to win this year somehow.
Yeah, right? It's going to be a Washington previous San Jose series, final. Yeah.
But seriously, I just think
I'm not picking the
came
out of
the
first
empty.
Round.
Yeah,
I'm not, because screw them.
They broke your heart to me.
Do it. Prove it to me by doing it for once.
That's what I said about the Jets at the start of this year, and then they shoved it up my ass. Well, on that note, hope you enjoyed the trade deadline, everybody. And now it's time for the stretch run. Time to just see how all the new pieces fit onto the chessboard. Thank you for listening.